Okay, Boker Tov, everybody. Sarayim Tovim in Israel. Welcome, which is the last class of this season, Perkei Avot. I don't think you violate Bal Tosi, that you're adding to the Torah if you learn Perkei Avot in the winter, but somehow it's a summer summer learning, you know, schedule, as we've discussed in the past. I was thinking, I don't know seriously or not, and maybe we'll do a little bit of doing a review of what we learned this year. You know, I like to review every class. I don't review every point, and of course, whenever I review, I always add in new points. That's what I always tell my kids. And when we review, you can never review exactly. That's what the Talmud says. Eino dome shona pirko mea v'achat pam. It's not the same if you learn the chapter, it's literally 101 times, lelomed mea pamim. 101 times and 100 times is not the same. It's an amazing comment. And but because every time you learn, there's new insights and you see new things. We all know this, but it's very hard to do. People don't like doing it so much. In this Mishnah that I use a lot, the Mishnah Stura, I love. So they have here in the front, they have a way. If you can see it, I don't know if you can see all those little boxes. Can you see it? Okay, those are 100 boxes. I don't know why it's not 101 boxes. Oh, you know, I think they're make. I didn't count them. It looks like there's the 10, and then there's one at the end. So it's probably 101 boxes, and you tick it off every time you learn, so you can review the Mishnah 101 times. But some say 101 is like, the 101 is like, who cares? You know, if you tell somebody I reviewed it 100 times, whoa, that's impressive. You'll review 101 times, that doesn't register. So that's why the Mishnah distinguishes between 101 and 100 times. But some people say that, you know, the way our Talmuds are printed, of course, you know, the printer had a big impact on how everything works, is there are always four lines before you get to Rashi. Like the four lines on top of the Gemara, like wide, and then Rashi narrows. That's the way every page, as far as I know, every page of the Talmud works. Why that is, I have no idea. Probably is some printer. Obviously, it's because of the printer. I don't think there's any religious significance. There's no religious significance. This is heresy. There's no religious significance to the printing of the Talmud. But it had a huge, Daf Yomi is because a non-Jew decided to print the Talmud like this. Daniel Bomberg reprinted the first Talmud in 1523 in Venice. So he printed it slightly differently. So Daf Yomi would be more, would be less. There was no Daf Yomi. It's a funny thing. Just like our chapters in Tanakh, everybody knows the chapters in Tanakh are non-Jewish. The King James version, you know, of Tanakh, they're non-Jewish, but we all use them. We all use them. The convention is very good, and that's how we learn Tanakh. Every once in a while, you'll find that there's a different interpretation between the way the Christians and the Jews interpret the Bible based on where they put the prakim. So the first one and the obvious example is in chapter one of Genesis, that in the prakim, it ends after verse 27, I think it is. It ends after day six. Day seven is Perek Beit, because day seven is not a creative day. Nothing happened. And of course, in our tradition, the 7 days of creation go together. So we would, but that's okay. Anyway, so it's funny. Daf Yomi, the chapters of Tanakh, these were decisions made by, the printers for King James version of the Bible, but the printing had a huge impact on how we do. Chaim Soloveitchik has a whole book, how printing impacted on halacha. It's why we learn Tosfot. The Maharal was very, very upset. The Maharal lived in the 16th century. So I mentioned the first Talmud was printed in 1523. The Maharal dies, I believe, in 1609, if I'm not mistaken. So the Maharal is the first generation, you know, when the printing, and he was so upset that what are they printing Tosfot on the side of the page for? Tosfot is dialectic. It's difficult. It's hard to learn. Print the Rosh, print something easier that reviews. You don't have to know Tosfot. Rashi ignores Tosfot. Obviously Rashi lived before, but in other words, what does Tosfot do? Tosfot raises contradictions and problems between two different Talmudic passages. You're learning here, you're learning Beitza. We started yesterday. Beitza, Masechet Beitza. You're learning Beitza, Daf Gimel today, Daf Yomi, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. And there's a problem because in Moed Katan and Daf Yud Aleph, the Gemara seems to contradict. Okay, it's very nice. But Rashi doesn't care about that. When you get to Moed Katan, you learn Moed Katan. That's not what Rashi does. Rashi explains the Gemara before us. Tosfot sees the Gemara as an integrate it all. So Tosfot's very bothered. How can the Gemara say here? But you can understand the Gemara and Beitza very well without Moikat. And then gives all new responses. So the Maral didn't like that. The Maral felt that was only for super advanced students. And people spend too much time figuring out a Tosfot. They should be covering more ground. But that's because the printer put Tosfot on the side of the page. Had the printer put the Meiri, so we would have known about the Meiri, and it would be much different. Anyway, so that's how life works. Okay, those who want to believe that God's hand is working in history to do this, okay, I don't know. Yes, no, I don't know. It's not one of the 13 principles of faith to believe that, but that's fine. We always do like to find meaning. So anyway, so why four lines? So some want to say, because you have to review the Gemara at least four times. No, 100 is unrealistic, but you have to review the Gemara four times. That's the problem of Daf Yomi. That's the main criticism of Daf Yomi. There are many wonderful things of Daf Yomi, and overall, I think it's totally increased learning, but nobody reviews. Who can review? Who can keep up? Who can even keep up with the page? Unless you're dedicating 5 hours a day, which great people don't have. Okay, somebody just asked me privately, why is each page of the Talmud one? So that's page two. Of course, because there's no beginning, there's no end. That's that's really true. The Chumash has a beginning and has an end. We start. That's where we are. We're getting to Pirkei Avot. Asar Ma'amarot Nivra Olam. That was last week. 10 beginnings to the world. 10 sayings of the world. The Gemara has no beginning and no end. What do I mean? It's no beginning and no end. And I learned mathematics. So in grade, I don't know, when did they learn arithmetic? I guess in grade one or kindergarten. I don't even know. When did they get to multiplication? Grade three or four. Division, I don't know. Grade five. Long division. And then geometry, grade seven. And Chvais, they get to calculus in grade 12 and functions in grade 11. So there's a whole hierarchy, and you can't understand, obviously you can't understand anything about calculus if you don't know the basics. So everything builds on everything else, but there's it's easy, and you know where to start. The Talmud isn't like that. The Talmud, whatever page you open up, there's assumed knowledge. There's no beginning to start with. Everything is intertwined. There's like, it's all over the place. That's what we call it, the Yam Shel Talmud. You jump in the sea of Talmud. It's not like we begin with arithmetic. We begin, okay, this is the easy part, and we'll tell you some of the basic principles of Jewish law, and then we'll build on that. That's not at all how the Talmud works. As a matter of fact, Me'ematai Karim Teshma, the opening Mishnah of the Talmud. So right away, what do you mean Me'ematai? From when do we say Shema? What Shema? Who Shema? Well, who says you have to say Shema? That's the Gemara's first question. What do you mean from when do you have to say Shema? I don't know about saying Shema yet. So anyways, that's printing had a big division. Anyways, review. So, but anyways, we'll see. I guess I decided. The honest truth is, it would have taken me a long time. I didn't have to prepare how to do a proper review of the 21 classes we have, but maybe at the end we'll throw in a few ideas. Okay, let's get back here. We're here for, we're Perek Hamishi, fifth Perek, second Mishnah. We just began last week. Asarot Dorot Me'Adam Ad Noach. There are 10 generations from Adam to Noach and 10 generations from Noach to Abraham. And I pointed out, it's not exactly true. I mean, Adam is generation one, obviously. Noach is generation 10. So there are really 9 generations between them. So you can say Noach is the 10th generation. There are 10 generations, and then between Noach and Abraham is 10 generations. You go from 10 to 20, you know, from 1 to 10 only has 9 numbers. From 10 to 20 has 10 numbers because 11, you know, but I'll figure that out. That's great format, I think. Whatever. So it's not really relevant. I mean, it's just interesting. As we pointed out a few weeks ago, numbers are always rounded. In other words, obviously the Torah is Adam, Noah, Abraham, right? And we're coming to Rosh Hashanah. That's the theme. Malchiyot, how do we begin Zichronot? We begin by talking about Noah, because Rosh Hashanah is a universal holiday, right? Pesach is a Jewish holiday. You're not allowed to have a non-Jew eat the Korban Pesach. But the world, creation of the world, fits in very well for Rosh Hashanah, right? The creation of the world, that's a universal theme. And God created Adam. We'll see in a moment even more. We'll develop this theme. So we do have Adam. It didn't work out so well. And then Noach and then Abraham. But it's fascinating that our Zichrona, we don't just ask God to remember Abraham, to remember his covenant with our forefathers. We go back to Mehamabul, the flood, and the covenant with the whole world, and we're part of a larger world. That's really what the Netziv has a beautiful explanation. Rosh Chodeshim. Nisan is the first month of the year, right? Rosh Hashanah, Tishrei is the seventh month of the year. But it's Rosh Hashanah. It's very strange, right? You begin the year in the middle of the year. Like it's, so we have different years, but the Netziv explains that, a Jew, it's really, Rav Soloveitchik develops this at great length. A Jew lives in two worlds. We have the world of large. We live in the world at large. Environmental problems, COVID or whatever. We're part of the world. Peace. We have to deal with the world at large. We're engaged with the world. We have a message for the world. That's Tishrei. That's the world that God created in Tishrei. That this, and that's why it's Malchiyot is God is Melech al kol ha'aretz. It's not, I was listening to a tape of Rav Soloveitchik this week. He said the difference between HaMelech HaKol HaAretz and HaMelech HaKadosh is that HaMelech HaKadosh is a Jewish bracha. Kedusha, sanctity, that's a Jewish concept. We were given special sanctity by God. That's HaMelech HaKadosh. So that's what we say all the Seret Yemei Teshuvah. But then we add in Rosh Hashanah Malchut, Melech HaKol HaAretz, that God is the king of the whole world, and that's when it's saying Noah. That's the world of Tishrei. The Jew recognizes God. The world of Nisan is uniquely Jewish. We have a special covenant with God. We were slaves in Egypt. We were taken out for a purpose, and a Jew lives in both worlds. And a Jew, it's often hard. Some people emphasize, you know, Nisan, and some people emphasize, you know, Tishrei. We need both. So that's why those two calendars are intertwined. But the mission is very concerned. 10 generations from Adam to Noah. So we said that God is very patient, and then 10 generations again. That here not to say God is patient. Abraham got all the rewards. So I think that's where we left off. Why does Abraham have to get 0-10? Yeah, okay. Why does Abraham get all the reward? That's a little bit strange. In other words, God is very patient, so he didn't destroy the world, and luckily Noah saved the world. The pshat of the Chumash, I know this sort of, you know, it's almost, how can you say such a thing? But if you just read the Chumash, Ein ha-mikra yotzei mitei pshuto, as our sages teach, no verse goes against, can be interpreted against its plain meaning. We may have additional drasha, doesn't replace the pshat. Drasha is additional layers of meaning to the pshat. But the pshat is always in existence. The pshat of the Torah is clear. God was going to destroy the world, and God was upset. He made the world. That implies God did not know what man was going to do. That's not, maybe not for now, maybe a little for now. When the Talmud says, HaKol bidei shamayim, chutz miyirat shamayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven, save for fear of heaven. So what, right? That's a famous expression that we have free choice. That's the Rambam puts that in Hilchot Tshuva, the importance of free choice. Without free choice, there's no concept of mitzvot, of beirot. There can be nothing. So, right? If we're fated to do what we do, so God can't reward us if we do good, and he can't punish it if we do bad. We didn't have any choice. So no, if we have free choice, that means God doesn't know what we're going to do, right? So that's the problem. That's in Pirkei Avot. How do you reconcile the two? So it's not so simple. The Rambam says we can't reconcile it. We can, we human beings can't reconcile it. But the simple pshat in the Chumash, really a discussion for another time, a further discussion. But in the Chumash, God was upset. He didn't know, so to speak. And that's, there are Mefarshim, as crazy as it sounds to modern people, there are commentaries who say God doesn't know everything about the future, because that's God limited himself, sort of the way he created the world. He had a, God is infinite. How can you make a finite world? So that's the Kabbalistic notion. God limited himself to create a world. So there are the Ralbag, for example, Gershundis, and the others who say when God gives man free choice, he willingly gives away for his knowledge to know what's going to happen. Okay, well, you, whatever. That's in a 5-year-long philosophy course, we can discuss this issue. But that's the simple reading, that it was only Noah saved the world. And so it says in the Chumash, God, Nichamti, I'm very upset. And notice Nichamti has the word Noah in it, right? The Torah always does these plays on words. Nichamti, kiasiti, I'm sorry, but Noah, Matzachem b'nei Hashem, but Noah found favor in the eyes of God, and because of Noah, we're here today. So without Noah, there would be no Abraham. That's right. Rosh Hashanah. We need, right, without Rosh Hashanah, we can't have been in any Pesach. But here, so up to Noah, God is very, very patient. From Noah to Abraham, I can say God's also patient. But that's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says, everybody made God angry. Everybody made God angry. That we do say, patient. But Avram came along. Not Avram saved the world. God wasn't going to
Have a good Shabbat and Happy New Year. Shana Tova.
Shana Tova. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and you.
Okay, thank you. So Avraham, God wasn't going to destroy the world. He had said that already. So what does Avraham get? Avraham gets the reward for all 10 generations. So why? What did he do that he gets the rewards for the generations between Noah and Avraham? He wasn't even born. He gets the reward for, it's a very strange expression, Sachar Kulam. So we could say that he learned from their mistakes. They don't, he got the word. He did so much good. It was equivalent. He did 10 generations worth of goodness. That's how the Bartanura explains what he did. But it's sort of a funny expression that Avram got the reward for everybody. It means he built. It most likely means he built on the mistakes of the past, right? That's why the Gemara explains that sins, when we do tshuva, so sometimes when we do tshuva, our sins are forgiven, period. And sometimes when we do tshuva, our sins turn into merits. That's what the Gemara says. So how does it turn into merits? So it's a rev salvation, because we've explained this before. It's that because you grow because of your failure, because you fail, you become higher. When the sin inspires you, right? We all know very often the Baal tshuva is much more excited and does mitzvot much more intensely with greater fervor and excitement. Not always, but because he missed out all those years of quote unquote of sinning, he wants to make up for. So the sin is the impetus to doing good. So you could say a little bit about that Avram learned from the sins on a global scale, and he did more. Now it's interesting that the Tiferet Israel, I said, we go from Adam to Noach to Avram. Right. And Noach is part of the process. And believe me, halavai, we should be like Noach. Ish sadik tamimei abedor tov. We ended last week with Ish, Yesh, some say Noach was greater than Abram, right? Some say not good. Some say yes, good. The rabbis say, Yesh mi rabotenu, how great Noach, had he lived with Abram, it'd be even greater. The question is he's greater than Abram. We'll leave that aside. And some say, no, he was only great in his generation, right? Anybody can say, it's easy to criticize. But the Tiferet Israel explained, I first heard this from Rabbi Liebtag many, many years ago. And when I was preparing this year last week, I noticed this, I saw the same concept, and the Tiferet Israel should actually mention it to Rabbi Liebtag. I'm not sure he got it from the Tiferet Israel or not, but the Tiferet Israel, Tiferet Israel lived in the 19th century, Yisrael Lifshitz wrote, he's printed in the standard classical edition of the Mishnah, right? You learn who's on the page, as we said. So he's on the bottom of the page. The Bartanura and the Tosfot Yontif in the Middle Ages are on the sides of the page, and on the bottom of the page, the Tiferet Yisrael. That's how the classic Yachin and Boaz Mishnah is printed. So Tiferet Yisrael, fascinating. He's a fascinating person, and like great people. But he has a lot of interesting ideas. So he explains here that when God created the world, he didn't want to have a Jewish people. God created mankind in his image. God didn't create the Jews. He created man. There were no Jews in the world, and there weren't going to be any Jews. That God wanted to make his covenant with all of mankind. As he put it, he wants to bring the whole world, tachat kanfei hashkina. The whole world should only be the divine presence. He should make a brit with him, make a covenant with him, give the whole world the Torah, do miracles for it. But you know what? After 10 generations, twice after he tried again with Noah, it didn't work. Okay, we'll be B'nai Noah, right? That's how we refer to the world, B'nai Noah. God tried again. All right, it didn't work. You don't want to go to three strikes and you're out. So God said, okay, too hard. I'm going to work with a few people, right? You want to change the whole culture. You can't work with everybody. I mean, you pick a few people and you put them in the right place, and hopefully they're influencers. That's basically the mission of the Jewish people. What does Avram do? Vayikra b'shem Hashem. He travels from place to place calling on God's name. So this original intent of God, that's how the Tiferet Yisrael explains, and I think it's a beautiful idea. This original intent, God was thwarted by man. Man sinned too much. So God said, Avram's a great guy. It wasn't so much that, yes, Avram was great, But it's God needed somebody to be the leader of this new nation. And Avram was the, you know, he looked around. Who am I going to pick? Lech lecha mi'artzecha. That's what the Sfademet says, right? We know that, that Terach started going to Israel. Well, we don't know why. The Torah mysteriously tells us Terach started going to Canaan. They stopped. And then God tells him to continue the journey. So the Sfademet, the first, Gerer Rebbe, the first or the second, I think he's the Chidush Erim. I think he's the father of the Chidush Erim. I forget now. I'm not, my Hasidic back knowledge. So the Sfademet 150 years ago or 200 years ago explains that, God, the land of Israel was the chosen land. God didn't tell anybody to go. He explains it different. God called out to everybody, just no one heard him. So Terach heard a little bit. He understood something. He didn't quite finish. And then Avram understood something more. So God told him, it's not, in other words, Avram was the one who sort of listened to this deep voice of God that was out there in the world. If you look, right, you can see God everywhere. You cannot see God anywhere. Depends what you are looking for. But God's original plan that the Tiferet Yisrael explained was Adam. And everybody would be from Adam and everybody would have a special relationship with God. If that didn't work, okay, we'll try again. Noah, that didn't work either. So that's probably what it means. Kibel olav sachar kulam. So Avram now, the whole world was meant to be a special relationship with God. And that was no longer. Now the Jewish people, the descendants of Avram would have the special relationship. Yes, we don't give up on the original mission. Our mission is Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, to go out and place the pace, be an Or L'Goyim, to influence the world, to have a thing. I've said, you know, Rabbi Gmar spoke last night on Nitzavim and the return to the land of Israel. That's what the Parsha is about. So, you know, Rav Shinshon Rafael Hirsch he's quoted Rabbi Hirsch in a different context. Rav Shinshon Rafael Hirsch says, you have to know it fits in with his worldview too. Rav Shinshon Hirsch felt that the exile was, he quoted the Gemara in Psachim that says that God exiled us among the nations so we can teach Torah to the rest of the world. In other words, exile is a positive development, or maybe not the punishment in the way we exile, but exile gives us the opportunity to teach Torah around the world. That's actually based on the Gemara, that's why we're here, put around the world. And Hirsch, as you know, was not a supporter of Zionism. He felt, I don't know what it would be now, but his time, he died in 1888. So the Zionist movement was just beginning. It's before Herzl, but the religious Zionist movement had started already. And Hirsch, believe we wait the Mashiach. He wasn't into Zionism. He was into being a wonderful German. Sort of ironic. I don't blame him, but what he writes about Germany and German culture. And he was very cultured German. Right. But Hirsch then develops this Gemara that the Jew has the role in an exile. And exile is good. So I thought, I don't know that it's true. In order to influence, in the 1800s, the way to influence people, you had to live near them. You had to be their neighbor. You had to go talk to them. Today, you can live 8,000 miles away. We can have classes on Zoom. You can live social media. You can live in it. Obviously, we all understand this. I don't have to explain. So new, once the 2000 years, we had to be in exile. We had no choice. That was the only way we could influence non-Jews. Today, we can influence non-Jews from the land of Israel. We can be, we can build a thriving country with the first in science and technology startup nation. It's not perfect, but Israel is a world leader in so many things. You know, we're so, the media, so many negative things often. We forget all the wonderful innovations that come out of the land of Israel. So perhaps, you know, we don't understand. I'm not, I have no wisdom into the ways of God, but even if you want to claim that throughout much of our exile, we had to be in exile. That was the way to influence non-Jews. That's not true anymore. You don't have to live. I guess it's true a little bit. It's always good. Personal meetings, right? That's right. How much Zoom is not the same thing as being in person, right? We're going to, a businessman sometimes still wants to fly to Paris. He doesn't want to do it on the phone. Okay, whatever. But you get the idea. So Avraham Avinu is sort of the result. And that's how the Mishnah is presenting it, that there were 10 generations. Then we needed a reset. Another 10 generations. And then we needed a reset for Avraham to get the scar for Kulam. Now, I will point out, we know how the Torah lists off the 10 generations between 1 and 10 and 10 and 20, right? You look in the end of Bereishit, the end of Noah, there's listing of genealogies, right? Boring, you know, who cares? They were this old when they had their first kid and they lived another 400 years. and therefore their total years were 828, and they died. Right, the 10 times. And same thing in the end, Parsha Noach. But in Parsha Noach, it doesn't say they died. In other words, between Bereshit and Noach, if you look in the genealogies, don't believe me, look it up in the Chumash, I mean, do believe me, whatever. You look it up in the Chumash, there's an extra verse from the, at the end of Bereshit that actually adds up. It's a totally unnecessary verse. Like it tells us how old they were when they had kids, how many years they lived. And then it says, Vayu, call you May Yared. All the days of Yared were Shtaim v'shishim Shana, Ushamayat Shana, 962. And he died over and over again. The end of Parsha Noach, we don't have that. The end, the Torah doesn't do simple math for us anymore. And that's, believe me, that wasn't the reason the Torah was doing it, right? The Torah just says, Shelach lived 30 years and he had Aver, and after he had Aver, he lived another 403 years and many children. It doesn't add that concluding verse. Therefore, his total years were X and he died. So you know why? Because, the first 10 generations of man was wiped out. Nothing good came of it. That's why God destroyed it. In other words, we don't, it's all death. The legacy of the generations from Adam to Noah is death. The legacy of the generations from Noah to Abraham is not death. Now, the truth of the matter is they were all alive when Noah was born. Abraham was alive when Noah was born. How do I know that? How do I know that Abraham was alive when Noah was born? See, who's still paying attention? How do I know that? Maybe
do
I make
math.
I'm sorry?
Do the math.
Do the math. Abraham is born Noach is born in the year. Well, we'll figure out. Everybody know what year Abraham was born in from creation? This is a cute one.
1948.
Yes. A different calendar, but 1948. Abraham was born in the year 1948. You just add up all the things in the Chumash. And Noach died in the year 2000. And he was 58, the gematria of Noah. Noah was 58. So at 58 years, as I don't know, 2016 or something, that's when Noah died. So Noah, it's fascinating whether Noah ever met Abraham. I don't know. He would maybe wanted to search him up, but Abraham was alive when Noah was born. 58 in those years was very young, but, it's a fascinating thing. So all those 10 generations were alive when Noah was born. That's the Medrash said they had to wait to Metushelach to die for the Mabul, the extra 7 days, right? The sort of the first mention of Shiva, allusion to Shiva. They had to wait another 7 days for the floodwaters, because those were the 7 days of the mourning for Metushelach. But it's not just that chronologically. It means there's something to be derived, to be learned from those 10 generations. In other words, the first 10 generations, it says, the Mishnah says, God was angry and he destroyed them. The second 10 generations, Abraham gets the reward from those 10 generations. In other words, Abraham learned something he gained from those 10 generations. So it's very interesting, right? Sometimes people sin and it has to be total destruction, nothing to do with the sin. We have to get rid of it. It's all bad. And sometimes no. Sometimes even when people don't do tshuva and they do evil, there's still something we can gain from this, something we can learn from this. So I think that's sort of the difference the Mishnah is alluding to, it's not that, okay, we waited 10 generations and God got really angry and he had Dor HaFlaga, right? Or whatever, the tower, he scattered the world. Okay. Anyways, but that's the Mishnah is very clear. We have this human development from Adam to Noach to Abraham. So now we'll go to Mishnah Gimel. Let's see. Hopefully we can, finish Mishnah Gimel. Asara Nishnionot Nichnasa Avram Avinu Alav HaShalom. Now this is a fascinating Mishnah. Oh, they're all fascinating. 10 tests. Nisayons, that's how we normally translate test. Nis really means a flag. 10, he held up something, you know. Yeah, I got 100. Asara nisyonot nidnas Avraham Avinu. 10 tests Avraham had. Alav HaShalom. Very interesting. Here the Mishnah uses the term Alav HaShalom. Should rest in peace. Ba'amad bekulam. Funny language. He stood in all of them. What does that mean? He stood in all of them. Who wants to translate that into regular English, spoken English? Bamad bekulam. What does that mean?
He passed our test.
Good. He passed our test. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. That's how most normal people translate it. And we'll have to see if that is correct or not. It's not, obviously, if I'm asking the question, it's not as simple as it sounds. And the language is strange. But Amad Bikulam. But yes.
He withstood.
So what does that mean? He withstood.
He held up against.
I mean, what should have happened because of the 10 tests? I mean, he should have like dropped out of Judaism. Like, what do you mean he withstood? Like he passed and therefore what? He went on to grade three. I hear what you're saying, but we're going to come back to that. It's just a strange language. Lodia, what does this tell us? Lodia kamachibato shel Avraminu lev shalom. The love Avram Avinu, the love of Avram Avinu. Doesn't say to what, to who, presumably to God, but it's interesting. Chibato, the love of Avram Avinu, Alav HaShalom. Twice, the Mishnah uses the term Alav HaShalom. Very interesting. Mishnah doesn't say Zichrono Lebracha. We don't say Abaye Zichrono Lebracha. You know, it's a very funny language that the Mishnah uses.
And all.
Now what's fascinating here is what's missing in this Mishnah? What's missing in the Mishnah? Look at Mishnah Dalit. Our Mishnah Dalit is also missing. But look at Mishnah Hey and Mishnah Vav and Mishnah Zayin and Mishnah Chet and the rest of the Mishnayot. You know what's missing? What the 10 tests were. In Mishnah Hey, we're going to learn there were 10 miracles done in the temple and the Mishnah lists them. And then we're going to learn there were 10 things created, you know, on Friday, Bein Hashmashot. And the Mishnah is going to list what the 10 are. And then they're going to tell there's 7 things that make the thing, and the Mishnah is going to list what they are. The Mishnah does not list the 10 tests of Abraham. I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe you can enlighten me. But of course, because the Mishnah doesn't list it, we obviously don't have agreement on what the 10 tests of Abraham are. So why don't we do that? And then we'll come back to the question of Amad Bikulam. Okay. So who wants to start rattling off the 10 tests of Abraham, right? The Mishnah said he had 10 tests, Amad Bikulam, and he stood in all of them, right? Hamidu Talmidim Harbe, right? The beginning of the prayer. Let's go. You can put in the chat, speak up. What were some
Akeda.
Of the 10? Akeda. Okay, so that's assume, what number is the Akeda? What number test would you say the Akeda is? Chronologically. When does it happen? And what point in Abraham's life?
Probably 9 or 10. I don't know.
Nine or 10, right? So many people assume 10. That's the climax. In other words, that's the, right. You know, he's building and oh my God, the Akedah. Okay. That's number 10. What's number 1 to 9?
Kivshan Ha'esh.
Okay. Very good. Except the Ramban doesn't fall from that one, but okay. Yes. Kivshan Ha'esh, throwing him into fire. What else?
Sending Ishmael away.
Great. What else? I think Jeopardy's in trouble now. I'm not following the whole thing with the producer. I'm not really following what's going on. Alex, without Alex Trebek, not the same. Going down to Egypt. Okay. What else?
Sarah was barren.
Sarah was barren. It's interesting. As far as I know, and that's fascinating. I didn't think of this, actually. None of the commentaries say Sarah was barren is one of the 10 tests. Fascinating. Now, it could be alluded to in the fact of that he had to throw Yishmael out, whatever. But it's interesting that Sarah, because how do you count? What's one? What's two? You know, maybe the Akedah is more than one. Like, how do you divide them up? But interesting, nobody says Sarah was barren. Leaving Haran. Excellent. Okay. Why is that a test? Why is leaving Haran a test? Well, what was so hard to leave?
His family.
Don't people like to move away? His father was an idol worshiper, no? Okay, no, it's good. Okay, I'm just giving you a hard time. Okay, yes, so leaving everything in the behind. Good, going to Mitzrayim, excellent. Okay, so let me just quickly read off.
What about not having any ownership of Eretz Yisrael before he died?
Elaborate. That's very good. Elaborate on that.
Because I just heard something about me. When he bought the plot from Arat HaMechpelah, he had to go and buy it.
I'll say something. I think this is a beautiful. I first heard this J.J. Schechter, Rabbi J.J. Schechter mentioned that years ago we were at a learning seminar with him for rabbis. He used to run these before Yontif, actually. Fantastic. He invited like 35 rabbis before Yontif and whatever, 3 days of learning with him when he was in Boston before he came to Hawaii, many years, 20 years ago. So he said that the Akedah, that's the climax, that's the pinnacle, that's the hardest of all tests, sacrifice his own son. You know what's harder than that? Is after that, you know, okay, what more, God, do you want from me? And then his wife dies. He lives another 38 years after his wife dies. And he can't even bury her. He doesn't even have a place to bury his wife. And he's ripped off, and how awful. And I remember JJ compared it to like after the Holocaust, you know, come to Israel and we have to fight for Israel. Like, you know, we lost 6 million and now more people. And it was sort of, in other words, even after the Akedah, after what more can you ask from somebody than the Akedah? And yet that wasn't the last test. Now, I don't know, neither Rashi nor Ramban list that as a test. It doesn't matter. And again, we know numbers at 10. It's not, it can be 12 and it can be 9 and it can be 28. Depends how you count. Again, the Mishnah, as we explained 2 weeks ago, with numbers, it's a concept, but it is interesting that that is not mentioned. And I think that's a very good point. Okay. So I'm going
to
list.
What about that he went to save Lot?
Ah, excellent. Yes. The War of the Kings.
Yes.
Yes, correct. That's listed. So I'm going to list off Rashi's 10, and Rashi, and I think the Bartanura has the same ones, I believe. I hope I'm, and then we're going to discuss why the Ramban, where the Ramban disagrees and why his disagreement is so fascinatingly important, I think. Okay. So Rashi says test number one, we're kastim, right? Thrown in the fire. Right? What we learned in kindergarten, right? Ephraim was thrown in the fire, and that's why, Haran died, because, you know, he played the fence. He didn't know which side to go. It worked for Avram, you know, that famous story. That's why Lot didn't have a father, and Avram took care of him. Famous Midrash that, so we saw Avram went in the fire and was saying, okay, I'll try that too. I'll believe in God. But obviously that wasn't a sincere belief, and the fire consumed him. And then Lot was left an orphan. Okay. Number one, Ur Kasdim. Number two, Lech Lecha. To leave your family is very hard. And I don't know if we'll have time to discuss who Terach was. I said before, Terach heard the call of God. If we take the Sfat Emet, even without the Sfat Emet, it's clear Terach goes to Haran. Like he's doing, I mean, he goes to Eretz Canaan. He doesn't make it. Many people didn't make it. But he goes on the journey. There's something good about Terach. There's a lot good about Terach. And not for now. I've written about that another time, even though, yes, he may have worshipped idols. But as we've explained, idol worship is not all bad. I know that's we don't have time to develop that. We just got yearning for God in idol worship. As the Rambam says, it began with a mistake. It can descend into terrible things. But idol worship can have positive traits. It's avoda. As Rabbi Gemara, I often quote him. He quotes last night. Avoda. Idolatry is avoda. It's just avoda zara. It's service that went off the tracks a little bit, but it originates in the yearning for God. And somebody wants to mute themselves. I don't know who to just, it's a little, thank you. So that he had to leave his father. That's very hard. Number three, famine, that he went down to Israel. He comes to Israel and there's famine, got to go to the land of Egypt. Number four, Sarah is taken. So interesting. That's sort of the same thing. They had to leave, and then not only had to leave, his wife is taken by Pharaoh. Then you have the War of the Kings, and he has to get involved, and he has to save Lot. It's interesting. They call it the war, not so much the saving of Lot, but you could count as one, too, but it counts that as one. Number, I don't know, we're up to six or five, that he will told his descendants will be slaves for 400 years. God says to, imagine God comes to you, it's now the year 2021. Right. So imagine in 1621, God comes to your great, 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 great grandfather and says, Bob, I'm going to make you into great. Your descendants are going to be wonderful. Just got to wait 400 years. Got to wait till the 21st century. We're in 1621. Like, what's going on in the world in 1621? There are no phones. There are no nothing. Wait 400 years. You'll be a great nation. That's okay. You'll suffer for Avduvi Nuotam. They'll persecute you. They'll kill you. There'll be a Holocaust in between. But it's okay. And 400 years later, what kind of ridiculousness is that? Right? We don't have time to develop each one of these themes, but that's a tremendous test. That's That's why nobody wants it. Who wants to be a great nation? In 400 years, it'll be a great nation. Give me a break. Okay. Then we have the test of Brit Milah. He has to circumcise himself at 99 years old. Wow. No anesthetic. Then Avimelech takes Sarah. So it's very interesting that twice, as we know, once by Par, once by Avimelech. Then he had to throw out Yishmael. He had to listen to Hagar, had to throw out Yishmael. And then the Akedah. Okay, now, so that's a pretty standard list. Again, you can come up with other things. He couldn't find the burial places we discussed and come up with other tests, how to divide them. The Ramban, that's a Rashi. The Ramban disagrees a little bit. He agrees with Motan. So his first disagreement is with Ur Kasdim, throwing in the fire. Why does he disagree? Why doesn't he count that as a test? If Nimrod said to him, right, either you convert or whatever, I'm going to throw you into a fire. Stop with your craziness about monotheism. So why? That's a pretty tough test,
But that's a midrash.
Ah, very good. So the Ramban, it's a midrash. Esther and Nisner have to be written in the Torah. And as we've explained, the Ramban is like, that's so many fascinating things, but the Ramban questions this midrash. I've mentioned a number of times the Ramban questions whether there are actually 613 mitzvot in the Torah. That's how he opens up his commentary in the Sefer Mitzvot of the Rambam, the Rambam's listing. We've mentioned there are 50 million mitzvot. How do we get 50 million mitzvot to 613? So you need all kinds of exclusionary principles. So the Rambam lists 14 exclusionary principles. Anything that's not written in the text, it's derived from the text. The 39 melachot are not written in the text. They're derived from the text. That doesn't count. The 613. So the Ramban says, who says you have to have 613 mitzvot? The one agadic statement somewhere? We've discussed this in the past. He wasn't sure. But nonetheless, he did what everybody else does. But everybody learned in kindergarten that there's 613 mitzvot, the pomegranates on Rosh Hashanah, as we always say, right? I'll go along with it. But he's not convinced. So the Ramban says the same thing. I'm not convinced. It's a midrash. Maybe it's meant like we discussed Rabbi Adler, who was discussing this week, Benny Gesundheit, when the Tanatoka. If we know now the scholars say maybe it takes away some of the fun, or not the fun, some of the emotion that the Tanatoka, maybe it's a made-up story with Rav Amnon and the bishop. Maybe it didn't actually happen. Maybe, but it doesn't really matter because it matters historically, but that's not the point of the story, to tell us historical. So the Ramban is always very careful. You have to distinguish between what's historically true and what's a medrash, what's a 18. So he's not sure the story happened. It may have happened. It may not have happened. It may be the rabbi's way of poetic license. Remember, what did rabbis do? What's midrash? Midrash is rabbis using creative license to talk to the people of their time by referencing things in Torah and projecting back from their time Torah. They knew it wasn't historically accurate. That wasn't the goal of midrash. So the Ramban's not going to count the Ur Kasdim. Fine. So he needs another one to count. He's got to replace it. Now, but here's the real problem. The Ramban, now, we said going down to Egypt in the famine, right? That's one of the tests, right? What's the problem with that test, counting that as a test? Why is that maybe a little bit of a problem? If you know the commentary of the Ramban, you have to know the commentary of the Ramban for this one. So the Ramban here, and this has developed a whole literature, the Ramban says, no, da, ki Avram Avinu, chait, if I remember the exact language, chait chata gdola bishkaga. Avram Avinu, chait chait gdola. He sinned a great sin. He did a terrible thing. Bishkaga. He didn't purposely do it. He made a terrible mistake. Okay, the mistake. What was his terrible mistake? He went to Egypt. God had just told him, go to the land of Israel, I'll make you a great nation. To get to Israel, and 5 minutes later, he doesn't have what to eat. All the restaurants are closed. And then he says, okay, I'm going to Egypt to get food. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't you have faith in God? So the Ramban is very critical of the Ramban very often is critical of the of what that was his approach. So today, not in many circles, this approach they don't like. But that was clearly the approach of the Ramban, that the Avot and this approach of the Chamli, the approach of many people, the quotes of the Midrash. The Midrash always finds criticism because that's the way we learn, or as you know, Rav Lichtenstein told us, you know, if you make the oven into perfect your specimens, they're meaningless to me. If Avraham Avinu wasn't a normal human being with psychological analysis and emotions and feelings and mistakes, then what am I going to learn from him? If he was an A, he was on such high level, I'm not like that. I can't learn. Avraham was normal. He was like me and you. He just was really great. He developed himself. That's they have that Moshe Rabbeinu, the Tiferet Yisrael, quotes how Moshe Rabbeinu tells about himself in a midrash that I was I'm full of anger, and we know he had a temper. I worked on myself. We don't want to make these people too great, then we can't really learn from them. So the Ramban is critical of Avraham Avinu. So if it's critical of Avraham Avinu, so obviously he can't count this as one of the 10 tests because he failed the test. There's only one problem. The Ramban does count it as one of the 10 tests. And you know what else the Ramban does? Throwing out Yishmael. You know what the Ramban says? Avraham Avinu did a terrible thing. How could he throw out his son? He should not have lived. It's not so much Avraham Sarai, even more. So, but Avraham shouldn't have listened. The first time, right? It was like twice. And then God said, okay, call a shirt to Mar Sarah Shema Vekola. But that was only later it's not so much throwing out Yishmael. I'm sorry. Her throwing out of Hagar when Hagar gets pregnant, right? Because it never works. Two wives, Achad Avav, Achad Snua, right? That's the Torah last week or 2 weeks ago. When a man has two wives, you're always going to have one you love and one you hate. It's not, the Torah is against polygamy. The Torah allowed polygamy, because for whatever reason, maybe at the time it was needed, there weren't enough men. Whatever the reason is, the Torah allowed polygamy. It doesn't mean the Torah liked polygamy. There's lots of things it doesn't like, but allowed. Eventually, polygamy got banned. Yeah, we grew beyond what the Torah says, and we banned polygamy. But it's clear polygamy doesn't work. Look what happened to Yaakov's wives, and look what happened with Sarah and Hagar. And that's the language of Avavasnua, is the same language by Leah. He hated, that's the language the Torah uses. We have two wives, one you love, one you hate. So Sarah said, take Hagar. That was great. That was great. Yeah, I can't have kids. Wow. What self-sacrifice. But the problem is, it was too much. If you do too much chesed, you're not doing any chesed. There reaches a point, it's too much for you. You can't do it. She thought she could. So the Ramban says it was a great sin. It was such a great sin. That was one of the reasons that we had to suffer in Egypt. That the Ramban there, the Ramban writes that going down to Egypt, the mistake of Avraham is lack of faith in God is why we had to go down to Egypt for 200 years. And Sarah throwing out Hagar is why we had to be persecuted by the Jews. It's pretty severe criticism. I mean, the results of these criticisms were pretty harif, the Ramban says. Whoa, 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 whoa. And yet the Ramban also counts that as one of the 10 tests. So what do you see from the Ramban? And that's getting back to Amad B'Kulam. You see that Amad B'Kulam, at least according to the Ramban, others will disagree. Given according to the Ramban, Amad B'Kulam doesn't mean he passed all the tests. He stood, he grew from all the tests, but maybe he failed some of the tests. That otherwise it's impossible. How can the Ramban say on one hand that it was a great sin? That's his language. Chet chatad gedola, not just a little sin, a gedola, a big sin. Ishkaga, yes, accidentally, nonetheless. Accidents, we're responsible for the accidents too. And it's easier to do tshuva, but still. So Avraham Avinu sinned a terrible sin inadvertently, and yet that's one of the 10 tests that he amad b'kulam, he stood. So Avraham learned from that mistake. So that's why I said, and that's why the language, I don't know what the language would be, a bar b'kulam or whatever, he passed them all. I'm not sure what the exact language, but that's not the language of the Mishnah. The language of the Mishnah is amad b'kulam. He grew from them. And basically, we learn from our mistakes. Failure is a great teacher. It's okay to fail. Avraham Avinu got an 80% here. I mean, that's what the Ramban is really saying. Two of the tests, he failed, so to speak. I mean, the Ramban doesn't say this. Like I'm saying, I'm putting two and two together. The Ramban didn't write a commentary that we have. Maybe he did. We don't have a commentary, the Ramban, on Pirkei Avot. So he doesn't comment on this Mishnah. But we know we have the Ramban's commentary on the Chumash, and we know what he said there, and we know he said they sinned, and we know he does count the 10 things, but he doesn't. So it's clear if this is one of the sins, I mean, if this is a mistake, And yet it's one of the tests. So amad b'kulam cannot mean he passed them all. It means he grew from them all. That's a very important, I think a very fascinating idea and a very important idea. Now, then I just want to raise the issue because I'd like to, whatever, raise the issue. And then I see Zev, I think you have a question. We'll get to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Just let me say this one point and then I'll take your question. Thank you. You know, some modern people have written that Avram failed the test of the Akedah, right? So that's considered bordering on blasphemy, right? How, you know, that Avram failed the test. He should have questioned God. He should have everything. So you see already from the Ramban, it's theoretically possible to have failed the test and yet count it and yet still croak something. Amad b'kulam. I'm not saying I accept that view or not, but I'm saying it is possible that both are true. God did want it was tremendous act of faith of Avram to be willing to sacrifice his son. That it doesn't take away one iota from what Avram did, even if he was meant to argue, like he argued on Sodom and Gomorrah when God said on the story. But he didn't argue, right? All the comment, why didn't he argue with the son? This was a direct command. It's easier to argue for other people. Whatever the reason is, Avram was quiet. Was that good or bad? So the traditional explanation is for sure that's the tremendous faith of Avram. It was good. And but even if you want to entertain the idea that he should have argued, that doesn't necessarily mean he failed the test. He's amad b'kulam. In other words, he gained from it. Yeah, God wanted him to argue, but he that was great. In other words, the reason people say it's impossible that he failed the test, because you look on Rosh Hashanah, 500 times on Rosh Hashanah, I'm exaggerating, but only a little bit. We're going to invoke the Akedah, Zchor Akedat Yitzchak. It's everywhere in the Yamim Noraim Davening, every day in the Slichas. It's all over the place. The great merit of Avram and the Akedah. Probably part of it is because some of these prayers were written in the Middle Ages. And it was the Crusades and it was the Akedat Yitzchak that they really had to do, as I was mentioning. Midrash and Piyut reflected the notion of the time. So they were saying the suffering that they were going through can be compared to Akedat Yitzchak, but that's neither here nor there. We invoke Akedat Yitzchak over and over as the merit. Even that's 100% true. Nothing can take that away. Even whether God wanted Avram to argue with him, I think it could be an open question. And based on this Ramban, it is possible that he should have. That doesn't take away from the greatness of what he did. Okay, I hope that makes sense. Sort of it's a fine, nuanced point, but I think it's an important point. Yeah, Zev, what did you want to ask?
Yeah, you said the Ramban said that when he went down to Egypt, it was a chet, chatah gedolah, and then you say he did it bishgaga.
Right.
What aspect is bishgaga? He had every intention to go down.
No, that it was a sin. He didn't realize it was a sin. In other words, he thought he was doing the right thing, right? That's, listen, a sin. I know this piece of meat is not kosher, but I know this money is earned a little bit, not so kosher money, but you know, I like money. So it's okay. You know, everybody does it. It's a little bit. I'm pretty honest. I give a lot of sucker. So that's not a chet. That's not bishgaga. But here, when you're faced with a decision to make and you make what you think is the right, he was 100% purely motivated. That's the sad part. What the Ramban is saying is really very harsh, because the Ramban is saying, even though he did it by accident, because he did this terrible sin, we had to suffer in Egypt. Just let me pull up my Chumash. I'll read to you the Ramban very briefly. Here it's Perek Yud Bey, chapter 12, on Lech Lecha. And the Ramban says like this, what does he say?
Doesn't pikuach nefesh come into it at all? Well,
others disagree with the Ramban, right? Others say, what are you talking about? You know, of course, well, but God gave him a promise. That's, again, a very difficult question. We don't have prophets today. We only have pikuach nefesh. But if God came to you and said to you, go to this land, so what do you mean? That's what the Ramban is saying. Yes, God was overriding pikuach nefesh. So just let me find it by Hira Abba Aretz. Okay, so the Ramban says, by Hira Abba Aretz. Hine Avram Avinu Yarad, the Mitzrayim Vnei Ra'av. Avram went down to Egypt because of the fast. Okay, Bakadosh Baruch Hu Votziv, Gamsiva Paro. For Remez, this is a hint that his children will be slaves in Egypt. Okay, so what did he say? Let me just find it here. Bida, the Rambam. And no, you should know, like that's an important. You know, he just said, everybody, wake up. You may have ignored the first half of my commentary because it's in the second half. No, I want you to know. The Avram Avinu, chata chet gadol, not gadola, gadol, bishgaga. Avram Avinu sinned the terrible sin on accidentally. He should have trusted in God. He adds the sin that he lied about Sarah. That was also, it's one thing he had to go to Egypt. It's another thing he lied about Sarah, right? So this is, and because of that, that's why we had to go. And because of this action of Avraham Avinu, Nigzar al Zaro, it was decreed for his descendants, Hagalut. That's why we had to suffer and go to exile to Egypt. Whoa. This is a harsh, really difficult Ramban. And the Ramban, if I can find it, Tetvav, I think I have it here. Maybe Tetzayin. Where does he throw it, Hagar? What parish is that? I don't want to spend too much time. It's getting out. Yeah, here it is. Vatar Ramban. So the Ramban throws out Sarah. Notice he doesn't say that Sarah sinned bishgaga. He's more, in other words, Sarah sinned, not inadvertently. It was a sin. Chat'a imenu, our mother, sinned b'inui zeh, by afflicting Hagar with this affliction. V'gam Avraham v'anichol asokin, and Avraham should have stood up to his wife. Yeah, he wasn't as bad, but Avraham Avinu should have stand up. The Shema Shemetanya, and God heard the cries of Hagar, but not Tana Ben. And he gave her a son, Shia Pera Adam. That's going to be a wild animal. La'anot Zer Avram. He's going to persecute the Jewish people, the Sar Bechomineinu, all kinds of persecution. These are very difficult Rambans. I don't know if you ever exposed them, but what can I tell you? It's based on the principle of the Ramban that Masei Avot Siman Lebanim, that all the stories in Bereishit happened because of to foretell the future. Everything that happened in Bereishit is signed will happen later on, going down to Egypt. So that's the Ramban's philosophy. I see it's already late. We're for sure not going to be able to review what we learned all year. But anyways, I have more to say on this Mishnah. Maybe we'll leave it till next year, please God. But okay, let's just quickly review what we said. We discussed the importance of review. So if I don't review, you can review. It's all on tape, everything. 100 times, 101 times, 4 times, the printers, the influencers. The printers, we discuss God, Adam, Noah, Abraham, the three-tiered system, and that wasn't God's original plan. God's original plan was everybody would be from Adam and from Noah. We don't need a special nation, but when it didn't work, God had to change his plan, and Abraham learned from the 10 generations. The first 10 generations had to be wiped out. They died. The second 10 generations, they weren't good, but we can learn from them. And then we discussed Amad Bikulam. There were 10 tests, but interesting, the Mishnah doesn't mention what they are. So you have a little bit of debate on what exactly they are. Amad Bikulam, as we saw, many, I'm not saying the Ramban's the only explanation. Some will say it means he passed them all with flying colors. Some say he did the right thing to go to Egypt. But the Ramban's explanation, I think, is just fascinating. Amad Bikulam, he grew from them all. He grew from his mistakes. That's the greatness of Abraham. And even if most of the tests he passed with flying colors, but some he could have done a little bit better. And whether that can be applied to the Akedah is just a fascinating question. But even if it can, it doesn't take away from the greatness of what he did by the Akedah. Okay, I think that's pretty much what we did today. I want to thank everybody for coming. Please, God, I'm thinking next Thursday night is some good. So if people are willing to come, maybe I'll give the Parsha Shir by Elach next Friday morning. Let me know if you're not willing to come, but I'm happy to answer questions afterwards. Yes, somebody just sent me. So I guess I'll know if you'll come, if you'll be here. So but I don't want to ask after some good. I think maybe it's hard, whatever, but we'll see. And then we'll have to figure out what going forward. But anyways, I want to wish everybody Ishva Shalom, it's been a pleasure learning with you, and you know, your comments and questions and critique especially is always welcome. And this Sunday we do have 2 classes, Natty Help God on Sefer Yonah at 10 o'clock, preparing for Yom Kippur already, Yonah, of course, and Rabbi Lieftag on Sefer Dvarim at 11:15. And then Thursday, Tzom Gedalia, Rabbi Shvat will give the fifth part, the last part of the series on a Rosh Hashanah for Rav Kook. Okay? So,
Rabbi,
Friedman, Rabbi Hillman. This is Rabbi Friedman. I just answered your email. Put it wherever you want to put it. You'll see the rewritten of the language, okay?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I'll take a look. Yeah, yeah.
You'll attach it somewhere. Okay.
I'm actually planning to send out I want to send out my Daf Yomi piece on Beitza that I just wrote since we started yesterday. I don't want to get so whatever.
Oh, so
no, based on the Dvar Torah, on the
lovely.
Part. Anyways,
beautiful class today.
My day is only lovely. Starting.
Lovely class.
Thank you. Thank you for every class. Thank you.
Shana Tova. Okay. Test regarding Sarah. Okay, I think I did talk about that. Hold on. Let me look at any questions here. If you understand the test, define the customs of the day, which spread sacrifice when firstborn, then he passed. Yeah, for sure. I think to say he failed the test is a terrible thing to say. That he didn't get 100 on the test, I think you can say. In other words, the test demonstrates amabuklam great things. You may be able to argue that, I think, is open to interpretation, especially if you take the approach of the Ramban, that maybe God really did want Avram to argue with him, or whatever. Now, or some say maybe not to slaughter his kids. See, I didn't even say that. I only said that the failure of the test was that he didn't argue with God. I think I just want to go a step further. I think this is already more problematic to say these arguments that he was actually willing, like he lifted up a knife to kill him. He was going to do it. That was the failure. So I think that's much more difficult to say, to say that. I'm just saying a little nuance here that Amad Bikulam doesn't mean he necessarily passed every little point. You can grow even when you can and you should. The only way to grow is by making mistakes. Yeah. To say that it was wrong for him to kill, to say that he should have argued, that I can hear. To say that he shouldn't have carried out the command of God, that's a little bit harder to do. But I don't know, maybe Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev would say he should have told God, go jump in the lake. You know, Berdichev, you know, would tell God, you can't do this, you're not allowed to punish the people. But this is before the Hasidic movement, so I don't know. But we know Avram did that by storm. He did argue. So I don't know, it's a complicated question. Obviously, we didn't discuss the whole command. There's much more to discuss. Okay. All right, thank you very much. Okay, any other comments, questions? Hello.
Not too bad. How are you doing?
Okay, all right.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
I agree that next Friday morning is better than Thursday night for the parsha.
First of all, our fast ends later here. It ends about 8:30. I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
So it's and I think it's just hard for people. I think 11 in the morning we can have a class. So on Friday morning, what else am I going to do Friday? I can't teach. It'll ruin my day. You know what this, more than the student wants to learn, the teacher wants to teach.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. Anybody who teaches knows that, teachers more eager than the students, but new. Yeah. Okay.
All the best. Shabbat shalom.
And Shana Tova, all the best. Thank you.
Shabbat shalom. Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.
Lovely.
Bye. Thank you very much. Zev, you wanted to ask me something, correct?
Yeah, about that kashrus question. Yeah,
it's the not bar not. You know what not bar not is?
No.
No tame tam bar no tame tam. It's the grandson. Okay, so we have Zev just asked me a kashrus question. He cooked, if I remember the question exactly.
I can tell you.
Carve in a meat pot, and you want to know if you can eat that food with dairy.
All right.
So the simple answer is yes. There's some debate on some nuances and minhagim, but for sure. So first of all, if the pot wasn't used for 24 hours, it's an eino ben yomo, then you don't have any problem. Then there's nothing to discuss.
Wait, can I just clarify something? It wasn't used for 24 hours, but the applesauce, which was cooked in the pot, was put into a plastic container, which is used only for meat. And I was eating it out of it with a meat spoon. Can I eat a dairy cookie with it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the question.
Yeah, yes, you can. So let me just explain. Basically, our laws of Kashrut developed a lot of Sinji. The first rule is any food that is cooked in a pot, even a non-kosher pot, that hasn't been used for 24 hours, bid the evet, you can't do that. But if you did it, the food is kosher. So any food that's cooked in a fleishich pot, so it theoretically becomes, you know, fleishichs, right? But if it's after 24 hours, it doesn't become fleishich. So now, even if it's within 24 hours, if the food is parved, if the food is par food in a meat pot, you'll cook, use the meat pot 12 hours ago. But there's no meat, really. It's a little absorption. That's the whole question today. We'll leave that all aside. So there's a little absorption from the pot into the par food. But, and then you put it on a dairy plate, right? So that's a double absorption. In other words, every time, like a cliche on Shabbos, every time it goes over, the transfer is much less, halakhically, leave out the sign. So that's what we call nat bar nat, no tain tam bar no tain tam. The first no tain tam, the first taste goes from the pot into the applesauce. That's one. And the second one goes from the applesauce to the dairy plate, that's two, and it's heter. In other words, it's the applesauce is kosher. Everything is kosher. It's just the meat and the milk. So that's allowed. So for sure you can put it on a dairy plate and eat it, no problem. The question is, can you put if it was, let's say, I don't know, can you put the applesauce in the glass of milk and drink it? I mean, that's a bad example. But in other words, can you eat it mamash? Mamash, mamash with the food. So that I think is dependent on min hagim. So if it's eino ben yomo, yes, you can. If it has to be used in 24 hours, I'm 99% sure you can even eat it mamash with milk in your mouth at the same time. If it's ben yomo, then many people say you shouldn't eat it with milk at the same time, but you can eat it on a milk dish and you can, you know, it doesn't make anything fly shifts and everything just because it wouldn't, you know, scrape up the dish. Just you shouldn't put it in your mouth at the same time. That's the whole heter of dairy equipment they used to use, the OU. I don't think they do that anymore. They used to say it's on dairy equipment, so it doesn't make you milchtix. In other words, it was something par was cooked in a dairy pot, doesn't really turn into milchtix. And then you can technically eat that with a meat meal, but according to some, you shouldn't, if it's with a ben yomo pot, you shouldn't eat it mamash with the dairy or the meat, like the opposite one. Make sense?
Thanks.
Yeah, so that's what we call nat bar nat. That's an important heter and kashrut and whatever, and like anything. But for sure, b'diyeved, like there's nothing to discuss. It's like katchil, are you? Now, I'm not allowed to cook. I can cook dairy. I can cook parv in a meat pot, but I'm not allowed to lekachila use an eino ben yomo pot, and you know, like I can't cook meat in a dairy pot after 24 hours and say, okay, well, I can eat the food. That's only if you made a mistake and you did it, then it's okay. All right.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you very much. Why is everybody's listening to the questionnaire? My gosh, to a lot of people. Okay. I guess these things come up a lot. And any further questions, I'm happy to answer to the best of my ability. I'm nobody's rabbi here. Ask your own rabbi what to do, but if shout out to my son is laning tomorrow at Opana. Elnatan's laning tomorrow at Opana.
Oh, very nice.
Yes. He laned a couple weeks ago, and yeah, he's laning, I think, every fourth week this year. He's on a four-person road.
Yeah, Jacob is handling it.
Yeah. So that's good. I'm glad he's going to lane, you know, at least on a semi-regular basis. Okay. Time to leave, everybody. Have a great Shabbos, a great year. Okay. All right. Be well. Oh, Tovar, you're here. Let me say, where did you go? Did you just hang up?
Right, I'm here.
Oh, hello.
Say hi to your great niece.
Hello, how are you doing?
Say Shabbat Shalom. Here, you can say hi to... say hi to Daniil for a sec, or he's running around.
Daniil to join here a little bit. Shalom.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah,
trying to get Shabbos started here in 7 minutes.
Oh, 7 minutes. Okay. I get
No. Why are you crying?
All right, everybody's okay a little bit? Noise?
Everyone is good.
All right.
No, I know. You want to take a Shabbos? It's for Ellie. You want to take a Shabbos?
Hi. So this is and my sister visiting after a long time. Hi.
Hi. What are you eating? Hi. You're eating your meatballs.
Now people at our personal on Zoom. My gosh. Okay, Mr. Zucker, how are you?
Thank you. I'm sorry. My
good Shabbos.
Okay. Good Shabbos. Thanks. Okay, we'll speak to you. Okay, Tom.
Thank you. Indeed. Just a hint. I had something I wanted to ask you. Firstly, it's a wonderful lecture, this last one, really. And especially the Ramban on the 10 tests. It's mind-blowing. And, well, all your shirim have been wonderful, but this one especially. I wonder if I could say, if you say Avraham, he survived the 10 tests. I don't know what survive means exactly.
So I have a couple more explanations. Running out of time, and I didn't want to just say, like, I want to develop the theme. So we're going to leave it, please God, for next year. If I remember to start right here, you know, and Ahmad Bekulam, it's a vague term, right? It's sort of, what does it mean? Ahmad, he stood in all of them. So Stan, the simple explanation, he passed them all, like he withstood them, like Eve said. He they were hard. God gave him tests and he came out stronger. Though that withstood doesn't necessarily mean he totally passed, which is how the Ramban is kind of explaining it.
Yes, but that's good. You see, when you say Ahmad and you say withstood and stood, you're not just playing games with words, stand or made stand. There's a connection.
Sure, of course, the Mishnah was written with such precision, every word. That's why we analyze every word and every phrase. And of course, Yeah.
Thank you. So I'm looking. When you're continuing this coming Friday, again, there'll be.
Next Friday, please God, we'll have a regular share. I'll discuss by Eilef, the last two mitzvot of the Torah. I don't know yet exactly what I'll discuss. If I have to check if I discuss the mitzvot to write a safer term, well I'll come up with something.
Okay, good. Well, best and thank you. I'm looking forward to this next lecture.
Okay. Be well, everybody. Okay. Good Shabbos. Yeah. Okay. Good Shabbos.